following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way, something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. Today I begin with a quote. A universal and perpetual peace, it is to be feared, is in the catalog of events which will never exist but in the imaginations of visionary philosophers or in the breasts of benevolent enthusiasts. This from the mouth of James Madison, our fourth president of the United States. To the point, this show is dedicated to all the men and women in the armed forces of the United States. I offer a prayer for them and their families as they are required to do these most difficult tasks in these most trying of times. I recall another quote by an American patriot, Thomas Paine, who said, "These are the times that try men's souls." But did you know that Thomas Paine, although not a soldier, influenced those revolutionary times through his inspirational writings and personal efforts to provide funds to buy and deliver supplies for American soldiers fighting for America's freedom during the Revolutionary War? A less oft heard and spoken quote of his should be an inspiration to all of us. I quote, "I prefer peace, but if trouble must come, let it come in my time so that my children can live in peace." Fellow listeners, these are trying times, and did you know that our military is stretched to the limits? This installment of the Did You Know Show features, yes, the Department of Defense. This continues my series on the individual departments of the federal government. I don't know about you, but I know that I believe it is more important for our soldiers to have the best equipment than to have those receiving the largesse of the American people to not have any cuts to their benefits or, as they, our Congress calls them, entitlements. Having said that, what needs to be said next is that just as our federal government has turned into a huge bureaucracy that no one seems able to control or let alone understand, so also has the Department of Defense. In this episode of the Did You Know Show regarding the Department of Defense, I'd like to focus on why size matters, why duplicity is rampant, and our ever-expanding military needs to be somewhat pared down to a more reasonable level. The paring down aspect will be more evident as we proceed through this podcast. From the DOD's own website, we have their mission statement. The Department of Defense is to provide the military forces needed to deter war and to protect the security of our country. We all know, or we should know, that the Defense Department encompasses the Army, the Air Force, Navy, and of course, the Marines. With an organizational structure, top to bottom, from the Secretary of Defense, appointed by the President and confirmed by the Senate, to the lowliest soldier fighting for us in those faraway places. Hopefully, by the end of this podcast, we will have gotten to a place that answers whether the Department of Defense does, in fact, provide the military forces necessary to deter war and protect the security of the United States of America. The Secretary of Defense works in conjunction with the Secretaries of the Army, the Navy, and Air Force. Each of the three components, Army, Navy, and Air Force, have their respective secretaries along with an Army, Navy, and Air Force staff, with one small quirk being that the Navy organized itself as the Office of Chief of Naval Operations, the Office of the Secretary of the Navy, and lastly, and not to be missed, would be Headquarters Marine Corps. Further, there is a Joint Chiefs of Staff group which oversees 9 distinct combat commands throughout the world, including the Africa Command, Central Command, European Command, Northern Command, Pacific Command, South Command, Special Operations Command, Strategic Command, and lastly, Transportation Command to make this whole thing work. Under the Office of the Secretary of Defense, we additionally find 2 more major Pentagon-based groups. The first group is called defense agencies, of which there are a total of 17. And then the second grouping of this Department of Defense field activity, there are 10. These are all under the auspices of the civilian Secretary of Defense. The 17 defense agencies are Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is DARPA. And this is one of my favorites because of the fact that they do such tremendous work. Defense Commissary Agency, of course, we have to feed our soldiers. Defense Contract Audit Agency, watching how the contracts that are run for the military through the military. Contract Management Agency, sounds a bit duplicative. Finance and Accounting Service. Could not that have been rolled over? Defense Information Systems Agency, Defense Intelligence Agency, Defense Legal Service Agency, Logistics Agency, Security Corporation Agency, Security Service, Defense Threat Reduction Agency, Missile Defense Agency, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, National Security Agency / Central Security Service, and last but not least, the Pentagon Force Protection Agency. I guess these would be the guards standing around making sure that nobody gets in. Next, we have the Group of 10, the DOD field activities. Of course, we have the media activity, the POW / Missing Personnel Office, Technical Information Center, Technology Security Administration, DOD Education Activity, DOD Human Resources Activity, DOD Economic Adjustment, TRICARE Management, Washington Headquarters Service. Now, I'm sure at this point you're wondering, why have I read off this litany of bureaucracies within Department of Defense? I wanted you to understand that, yes, there is some reason and thought that was gone into this Department of Defense, and there truly is some organization to this military structure. Consider these separate departments as the fingers of the cog of the military-industrial complex. However, if one goes back just 30 or 40 years and a visit to the Pentagon would have resulted in you seeing mostly soldiers walking the halls of that structure. But today, that would not be the case. Recently, I had a chance to talk to the vet and he confirmed my previous statement. Just as the numbers will confirm that statement, you will see more non-military personnel than military. From my research, I found that generally these agencies have civilian secretaries, civilian undersecretaries, assistant secretaries, or deputy assistant secretaries or undersecretaries. Think of it this way. You have the armed forces of the United States that are run by generals, but the Defense Department itself and the Secretary of Defense and his civilian assistants stand in the counterbalance to the military. And these, my friends, are run mostly by civilians. Yes, quite a few of the employees that are ex-military, but many just plain civilian types, answering directly to the Secretary of Defense through his undersecretaries. I must say at this time there are exceptions, and as an example would be the Defense Information Systems Agency, which looks like it was predominantly run by military types. A quick look at the Defense Commissary Agency, which is run by a civilian director. Well, there, out of 30 leadership positions in the organizational structure, I found only three that were military. The rest were civilians with a variety of backgrounds, with all being either SES, which is executive service, senior executive service, pay categories. That's the fellows that are making this $100,000 plus money. I then looked at another agency, the Defense Contract Management Agency. Here I found that, again, the ratio of civilian to military was 5 military for every 100 civilian employees. Again, this agency was run by a civilian, and I'm sure the head of this contract management agency had quite a heady group of staff and assistant staff, but that info was not available to me at the site that I went to, and I had to conclude this search. Now, in order to give you a better idea how this all fits together, let's just take one of those agencies and dig a little deeper and parse it to understand what it is that it does and what it should be doing to make the military more efficient and productive. The Defense Intelligence Agency, or DIA, whose mission is, first, in all source defense intelligence to prevent strategic surprise and deliver a decision advantage to warfighters, defense planners, and policymakers. We deploy globally alongside warfighters and interagency partners to defend America's national security interests. Notice that alongside, that means they're inputted within the military theater. Wikipedia puts it in a different way. Central producer and manager of foreign military intelligence for the United States. Duh. Is that not what maybe the CIA is supposed to be doing? This agency is directly under the Secretary of Defense. So here we have a division of DOD under the Sec of Defense reporting intelligence to that secretary. Now let's look at the military side. You have commensurate military branches that do the same intel for each specific branch. In the Army, we have the U.S. Army Intelligence Security Command. In the Navy, we have the Office of Naval Intelligence. And in the Air Force, we have the Air Force Intelligence and Reconnaissance Agency. Now, all three of these groups provide info to their respective services, in which I assume it is coalesced and provided to its particular military branch secretary, who then reports to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who I would presume would provide that information to the Secretary of Defense, and finally arrive at the office of the President of the United States. But remember that the Secretary of Defense has his own Defense Intelligence Agency, and just maybe now you're beginning to see why it takes so long for decisions to be made at critical times. Now, organizationally speaking, I would assume that the reason for the civilian side and military side of the DOD was to balance and perhaps coalesce the intelligence into one primary source. This would be a reasoned approach, but as recent history has shown us, when dealing with information from various sources, it just takes too long to come to a conclusive decision, or even a right one as to who is our enemy and who is our friend. At this point, I'll say, remember Benghazi. But now back to the DOD. Each one of the agencies in the 17 defense agencies has an assistant, and if he's a director, then there is a deputy director, and in some cases, a vice chairman. Then you have an additional position below that. That compartmentalizing the different agencies in DSS or Defense Security Service, you have a director and chair, and then you have a deputy director, a vice chair, then a chief financial officer, a chief staff officer, a director of industrial policy, director of counterintelligence, a director of industrial security field operations, and lastly, a director for the Center for Development of Security Excellence. Now do you see this bureaucracy? It just seems to grow and grow. Now do you see how decisions are not made due to this convoluted approach to decision making? While looking at this one agency, I ran across a job opening for what is called an industrial security specialist. This position was referred to as a special agent, but without law enforcement credentials, and the pay was pretty nice, ranging from $57,000 to $89,000. Not bad for an industry security specialist. Now, if the field guys are making that kind of money, can you just imagine what the bosses are making? Let's look at the employment numbers in DOD. If you recall of late, the military has been downsizing. The most current figures I could find from DOD showed that the current active military number was approximately 1.4 million soldiers, with approximately 850 active reserve. In a small niche called Defense Civilian Personal Advisory Services, I found an 800,000 number for civilian employees, but did not mention any number for contract personnel. While perusing the web, I found two different numbers listed for civilian employees. The Principal Director, Civilian Personnel Policy, Mrs. Donna Simur, refers to, and I quote, more than 900,000 civilian employees worldwide, and I stress, worldwide. While her Director of HR Operations Programs and Advisory Services, Ms. Lynn Baldrit, I quote, over 800,000 civilian employees throughout the DOD. And I would assume to get into these numbers, we have been dealing with each of these high-level, I would presume, ES Executive Service or SES Senior Executive Service pay grade employees. Remember, these are the $100,000 plus people, have quite nice size staffs also. And I guess bureaucracies, when they just grow and grow, have a difficult time communicating even within their own respective agency. Continuing on, in an article dated 5/6 of 2013 in the Washington Times, it states that civilian employment by the Pentagon stood at 801,000 with an additional 766,000 private contractors. Now you add the numbers together and you find that at this moment in time, the number of civilians conducting whatever work for the DOD is larger than the number of soldiers that the United States has. To bring those numbers into even better perspective, the Pentagon itself has on premises over 2,700 military and civilian employees there. But then if you count contract employees, the number swells to well over 5,000. If you're wondering how these numbers could swell to these amounts, just under the authority of the Secretary of Defense, I found a list of major elements of that office. I found 41 separate elements that report to the Secretary of Defense. Now, mind you, when I looked at these elements, I found that most were civilians, not military government employees. And you just know that the bureaucratic levels go deeper than one or two. That, my friends, is how the military-industrial complex that Dwight David Eisenhower warned us about has swelled the ranks of the military. In one phase, one can say that although DOD takes up roughly 20% of the federal budget, a very large portion of that is probably due to the non-military civilian employee side. I don't mind paying 20 cents out of my tax dollar to protect America, but I do mind when that 20 cents of a dot of a dollar includes a bunch of civilians telling the secretary what the military should do and then have liberals complaining about the cost of the military. Now you know that a very significant portion of that military budget goes to the non-military side of the equation. From this, we see how the military, in conjunction with the civilian aspect, performs its task. But I bet you didn't realize that the additional types of activities, tasks required of the military, but not relating to its fighting role. In the last 30 to 40 years, the government has embarked on an environmentally friendly mission, and the military has not been exempted. What has happened is that the mission for the military has expanded into an environmental role, requiring the military to divert resources from its primary mission. There is an executive memo floating out there in government land called Executive Memo 13423, which is entitled Strengthening Federal Environmental Energy and Transportation Management. One asks, what does this order really mean? Well, folks, what it means is that not only is our military tasked with protecting us and our nation, but our military is now tasked with that never-ending liberal mantra of environmentalism. Five primary requirements of this EO 13423 are reducing energy intensity by 3% each year, leading to a 30% reduction by the end of fiscal year 2015, increasing use of renewable energy, reducing water intensity, design and operating sustainable buildings, and lastly, managing federal fleets, which would ensure 2% reduction each year, measuring over the baseline from 2005. Federal agencies must also increase use of alternative fuels by 10%. In a way, this sort of answers why we have such a large civilian footprint in the military. Someone's got to keep track of all this stuff. These all sound like great and altruistic ideas, but they are not what the military should be involved in. This is what Dwight Eisenhower warned us about with regard to the ever-expanding military-industrial complex, except that the complex has turned into a bureaucracy. You know, it would be nice if our military got good gas mileage, but when it comes to war and protecting my country, I really don't give a rat's behind how much fuel an F-16 uses or how much fuel an aircraft carrier burns. Oh, excuse me, aircraft carriers are nuclear. My bad, I forgot. Well, it's only us civilians that should be protected from the evils of nuclear. So, we return to what the mission of the military as stated in the mission statement is to provide the military forces needed to deter war and to protect the security of our country. Folks, when I'm driving my car down the highway and not getting good fuel economy, then that is my problem with my budget. But when that soldier drives down a dirt road in a vehicle that is armor-plated and has to protect his behind, then I really don't care what kind of gas mileage that vehicle gets. As long as he is protected and the mission makes these United States of America secure and the SOB they may want to harm us are deterred from that mission, remember, the best defense is a great offense, and at this time in history, it seems to me that we have lost our perspective as to what we as a nation stand for. Finally, one last aspect to the military and its footprint on the globe. For those of you that don't recall, since the last century, we have fought two European wars, two wars on the Asian continent, and are now embroiled in a conflict that has bogged us down in the Middle East and now looks to involve us on the African continent. The United States military, by various reports, has an excess of over 1,000 bases strewn throughout the world. We have bases that still relate to our activities from the First and Second World War in Europe. In an article posted on the internet in the Asia Times, reporter Nick Terse reports, the U.S. military has a whole bunch of bases or posts throughout the world. In fact, rumor has it that no one really knows the exact number of bases or posts, including the military. I would refer you to the article, but the plain and simple analysis is that our footprint throughout the world is massive, and the massiveness is costing us a lot of money, not just to support our troops, but to build up those foreign forces in those countries that we are operating in. Well, that's my show for today. I hope you have enjoyed your journey into the Department of Defense. Until next time, in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.